Yeah, hello.
How's it going?
It's not too bad.
Not too bad.
Full of Mexican food tonight. How about you?
Chicken soup.
Chicken soup? Are you sick? Are you
no,
ill?
No, it's raining in Los Angeles. It rained the whole day.
Mm.
So I was feeling cold and I wanted soup. Can a guy just want soup sometimes?
Yeah, absolutely. We had that. We were going to do that yesterday, but the local place we wanted to get soup from only had really terrible sounding soups, so we didn't get soups.
Oh, well, that sucks.
Mm. I like a good soup, though, rainy or not. Even if it's just cold outside. What kind of soup? Oh, you said chicken soup.
Yes. But no, nothing fancy. Just the Pacific Foods, organic, blah 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 blah, boring soup.
Is it a grocery store?
Yeah. Because I had to stop and get oat milk.
To get oat milk?
Yes. I had to make my White Russian.
What's oat milk?
It's milk, a milk substitute made from oats.
Okay.
Yes.
Are you a lactose?
Well, sort of. I mean, it can upset my stomach sometimes, so I usually don't go for dairy if I can avoid it. Fun fact, oat milk has 2 grams of fiber per serving.
Oh, well, that's good. It's good to have your fiber.
Yeah, you really want to have fiber.
I was a little worried that we made it 221 episodes into the podcast before I found out that you were lactose intolerant. That would have been bad.
It's just occasionally I don't digest things well, you know, that's not a pleasant thing to talk about. But oat milk...
how's your drink, though? You made the drink.
Yeah, I've never had as the dude calls it in the movie, a Caucasian, which is apparently, according to Wikipedia, just something that somebody made up somewhere where it was... Just because it has vodka in it is apparently why it has the Russian nomenclature. And then there's a coffee liqueur and then heavy cream. Mm-hmm. The dude uses half and half in the movie.
Yeah. And then that powdered stuff over at Maud's place.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I don't. I'm not going to do that. So I have oat milk and then instead of Kahlua, I have Kahlua Especial because that has lower sugar.
Oh.
Yeah, it's very especial. And then I have some Tito's. That's all combined in a glass, and I'm gonna take my first sip.
Okay, go ahead. He's taking his first sip. Does it taste like a coffee milkshake ice cream kind of thing?
Kind of, but I think because I'm using the Kahlua Especial, which has less sugar, it's not sweet. Ish.
What's the flavor profile of your oat milk there?
Oh, it has a little vanilla, but it's naturally sweet from the carbs that are in the oats.
So it's like unsweetened other non-milk products.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I would say it is similar to your almond milks if you've had that. But
we do almond milk here, but we do sweetened vanilla almond milk.
Yeah, well what I really wanted was the Oatly or the barista tier oat milk that Pacific Foods makes, but they didn't have it at Gelson's, so I had to get Happy Planet.
Got the Especial Kahlua, and you want barista grade oat milk?
Well, yeah, because it is a thicker, consistency than what you get. This is more of like a milk consistency, so it's not a good substitute for something like half and half.
I think you've already put more thought into your beverage than the dude ever would in his.
No, clearly I have put way too much thought into it, which is weird because it's not the kind of, like, for being like his signature favorite drink, it's not the kind of thing you can just whip up on a whim, but everywhere he goes.
I think more people used to have Kahlua back in the day.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, if you're going to somebody's house, the odds are pretty high there's... like a 10-year-old bottle of Kahlua.
I got one of those. I think it's actually 20 years old.
Ugh, yuck.
I'm not sure if it's still good. I was considering trying it. Well, you were going to make one, but I didn't get around to it.
I like how you're worried that your one-year-old bottle of maple syrup that got a little crusty on the top is...
Well, that one was open. The 20-year-old bottle of Kahlua, I think, was mostly sealed.
Yeah, sure. I don't think that's how that works. I don't think I'm going to be making another one of these.
You're not going to roll up in somebody's house and go like, yeah, I'll take a White Russian, because they'll stare at you and go like, what? Why? We don't have that.
No, but I feel like when people saw this movie, it came into vogue for people to appreciate the dude's lifestyle choices, which I don't know why. Having watched this movie again, I'm reminded what a total loser he is. But
I appreciate some of his plaid shorts and sweatshirts.
His sartorial choices?
Well, some of them. I mean, he had that nice kind of purple V-neck he was rocking at one point. I was like, yeah, I would wear that. Actually, I'm not a huge fan of V-necks, but it looked really comfortable.
Yeah, not for me. Not my style guide. Also,
you're not gonna grow your hair out and then get a big bushy mustache that you have to lick the White Russian off of.
No. It's not a great look for anybody.
It was so, the '90s.
Yeah, it was the style at the time. But no, definitely not. But
so you don't want to be the dude. Would you be friends with the dude? Would you go bowling with the dude?
Oh, absolutely not. I don't think we would mingle well on any level.
You don't travel in the same social circles?
I don't think so. But having said that, you'd
more likely run into Maud probably.
Well, see, here's the thing. I also don't like Maud or Maud's friends, but I think you may be right in that I may bump into them in a more likely way. Although I may just bump into the dude as somebody who's stuck waiting in a checkout line behind somebody writing a check for 69 cents. But that's just, you know, that's life.
Mm.
But yeah, I was watching it and I was just like, you know, I know a lot of Walters in my life. There's... A lot of people with some explosive personalities who have some very strong opinions.
You know multiple Walters, you would say?
I would say that I know multiple Walters. Mm. That you perhaps are our friend Austin Brown. But
I don't think either of us are quite on the level of Walter. I don't think we're going to be shouting and or drawing firearms on people over minor bowling infractions, but, you know.
No.
I don't
no.
know Austin that well.
No, but mostly just the shouting part.
Well, I shout because I'm deaf, not because I'm, like, accusatory.
Sure. But then also...
Well, maybe Walter really has, like, an inner ear thing. Maybe he's got tinnitus from his time in Vietnam.
He does seem very affected by that.
Hmm.
But there's Donnie, of course.
Donnie?
No, but I think we all know who Donnie is in our social circle. Sorry, Rye.
Possibly somebody who dressed as Donnie for Halloween.
Oh, he did?
I'm pretty sure he did.
Oh, well.
Yeah, we'll get a tweet in like 3 days that has said like yes or no.
Yeah, it's one of those movies where you watch it, you're just like, these people are really strange and surreal, but it seems like you would bump into somebody as messed up as somebody that's in the film.
Yeah, they're Coen-y, but they're also, maybe it's just the fact that like you kind of grade everyone who supposedly lives in Los Angeles on a curve because you're like, well, there's a lot of weirdos out there. So they seem a little bit more real than they probably would be if this story took place in Colorado or something.
Yeah. Also, you know, I feel like this movie is not meant to seem grounded. So the larger than life stylings of these characters kind of make some fun caricatures of things. Like it's not exactly like there aren't that many artists who are like Maud, but there are artists who have weird, pretentious studios and awful friends and do crazy performance art things. That I believe.
Knox Harrington, the video artist?
Yeah. And, you know, Tara Reid, I always forget she's in this.
She has a minor role. I mean, well, she is I don't know. Is she technically the MacGuffin of the story? I mean, she's not really like in it very much, but she is the thing that is being sought in addition to the money.
Yeah. Her and the rug and the money. But this is such a strange movie. The casting is so interesting because you got your Philip Seymour Hoffman, you've got Tara Reid, as we had mentioned, Jeff Bridges, John Goodman, Steve Buscemi, who would go on to do lots of other Steve Buscemi things after this. And
Julianne Moore doing whatever accent that is.
God, I tweeted.
I so agree with your tweet, by the way.
Yeah, I tweeted when I was watching it. It was just like, what accent is she doing? Any movie with Julianne Moore? Because I feel like every time we watch a Julianne Moore movie for this podcast, not to hate on Julianne Moore, who I actually like in a lot of things. It's just that whenever I'm watching, I'm just always so distracted by the choices that she makes as an actress when it comes to the accent, because she's going in and out of some sort of weird kind of British mid-Atlantic thing. And then there's also like
she's
elements
kind of doing like a Hepburn kind of thing.
Yeah. Like there's those elements of like old Hollywood, old Hollywood silver screen actress. And it's just like, how does that fit into this? And then you watch something like Kingsman and the Golden Circle, and it's like she's got a sort of 1950s housewife kind of thing going. And then you watch Jurassic Park, and she has that weird Boston thing happening for no reason. And also on 30 Rock, she did the Boston thing. So it's just like, Julianne, why? Why are you doing this? Calm down. Like, you could have just said all this stuff, like, without an accent, and it would have worked
fine. She's from North Carolina. I wonder what her natural speaking voice sounds like.
I don't know. I mean, I would just assume just, like, that, like a person when she's in some of her other interviews and appearances.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure I have any reference to that. I know a lot of Carolinians who have some unusual speaking patterns.
Yeah. Oh, well, there was somebody from my school who was from North Carolina, but I didn't know it at the time. They said they were from North Kakalaki, and I'm like, what is that? Like, is that a place? Like, thinking it was some sort of, like, town or something? And then she's like, no, North Carolina, you idiot. And I'm just like, oh, right, sorry.
I've never heard that.
No, yeah. But
Is that a thing people say?
Just her, as far as I know. But anyway, she didn't have an accent or anything like that. But it's just so weird whenever you watch a scene with Maude in it in this, because she's posing in a very severe way. She has an incredibly severe haircut going on there, and she's got this accent that she's going in and out of different regions and time periods as she's saying sentences. It's not even like from scene to scene. It's just like she'll start a sentence with one, and then it'll just kind of like taper off into something else. And it's like, maybe I could buy, like, Maude, the character in the movie, might be putting on an accent, but that's not like something that's written in there as an affectation of the character. It's just it's just like some sort of headcanon you could possibly use to justify what in the world is happening with that. But yeah, I find her distracting. Although
she's a weird pretentious artist, and she's got old money, so she can do what she wants.
Yeah. And I like the guy who plays Lebowski, although I forget his name. He's good being a shouty guy. Some minor appearances here and there of other people. But this is just really solid casting, interesting acting choices. There's supposedly going to be a spinoff with the Jesus.
That's a terrible idea.
Yeah,
the
character has been authorized for use by John Turturro, but by the Coen brothers. But they will have nothing to do with producing, directing, or any of the things that are involved in the spinoff thingy that John Turturro wants to do.
Wasn't the like supposed backstory to that the miniseries The Night Of that he was in? Wasn't that supposed to be based off of his character from Lebowski or something?
I don't know. I heard that somewhere. I never saw The Night Of.
It's he plays a public defender or whatever. It's actually a really good series if you want to be depressed.
That's what I'm looking for in my life.
Yeah, exactly. Give yourself some time to recover from that. But I thought I read somewhere that he was sort of like basing his character off of Quintana. But who knows? I don't know. The I mean, of all the characters to pick, I mean, yeah, he's an iconic one. It sticks out because he's got his little purple flared pant, like jumpsuit thing going on. But he's a loud, jerky sex offender. So I'm not sure you want to really base an entire property around him. But whatever, whatever. I'd be more curious to learn more about Sam Elliott's character, the stranger, who is our narrator in this movie, mm-hmm. who may also be a transformer that turns into a tumbleweed. I'm not entirely certain how that works. I don't really know why he's here. He's kind of a great bookend slash third bookend that's in the middle. I don't know if that's really a bookend, book middle.
No, yeah.
He has a little flavor to it. I'm not entirely sure why he's there.
I don't know either. I think it mainly has to do with the affection the Coen brothers have for cowboy movies and stuff, and how they wanted.
They were like writing it. They're like, this movie's not quirky enough. We need to like have a narrator telling the story to the audience, so everyone knows that this is a larger than life story.
Maybe. I mean, I don't find that Coen brothers movies in general make a lot of sense. They usually just are like, here's a bunch of ideas, and there's a sort of this dreamlike logic that's supposed to take you through those various ideas. So I don't find The Stranger particularly distracting. There are other things in here that structurally I question, but the Stranger I'm fine with. You know, you get your narrator to give you your setup, and you get your narration at the end. And his appearance in the middle, where he talks to the dude, is nice because we recognize Sam Elliott's voice as being that of the narrator. And it sort of makes it appear as if there's this guardian angel who's come into the picture to guide the dude. But I mean, he does a terrible job of doing that, but he gives him some advice, and it sort of ties in together with the narration that's occurring for, you know, the kind of person that the dude is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's a good character. I mean, all of the characters in this movie, see, this is one of those movies that I have difficulty talking about because there are a million different angles you could come at it from, and they've all probably been covered already. It's a really good movie as an actual film itself. I don't know. I don't know what to say other than it's fantastic. But like all of these characters and the lines have become so iconic. Like, there's literally a religion based on this movie, which is so weird to think about.
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, there's a religion based on... You don't know that? You don't know the Lebowski lore?
No.
Yeah, there's a... I mean, I'm sure all of it is pseudo tongue-in-cheek or whatever, but... oh, here it is in the Wikipedia page. The Church of the Latter-day Dude.
No.
Organization has ordained over 220,000 Dudist priests.
Why do nerds have to ruin everything? It can just be a movie, guys. You can just...
It's called Dudism. Oh, apparently it has its own Wikipedia page.
you don't need to turn everything in a movie into a thing, everyone.
Dudism's stated primary objective is to promote a modern form of Chinese Taoism. So, you know, it's...
Did you see anything religious on display in this film?
Well, the dude is the Christ-like figure, so it's, you know, do as the dude does, not as he says kind of thing, I think. So they're following in his footsteps, like those guys who were chasing after Forrest Gump for 4 years or whatever.
He's not a Christ-like figure. He just has a beard. He wears a robe. He goes.
He's got an ethos. He's got a mentality, something that guides him.
But he didn't die for our sins or anything. He's just...
he's taking it easy for everyone.
He's basically the same at the end of this film as he was at the beginning of this film. He's not really... He's gone on a journey, but he hasn't gone on a developmental journey.
Mm.
People shouldn't model their lives after a Coen Brothers movie. Pro tip.
Probably not. That is probably, on the whole, a pretty safe rule.
Yeah, and, you know, well, like you said, this is a beloved movie, especially among, I would say, film nerds. And, you know, I really like it. And as you pointed it out, there are many quotable lines in here. There's a lot of good dialogue. Like, I still laugh to myself every time I think about the exchange of, you can guess what happens next. He fixes the cable. Like, that might just be, like, my favorite
story is
little...
ludicrous. Don't be fatuous, Jeffrey. Like, the whole thing is quotable.
Yeah, but I like that, just that little part. Just, you could say those two little lines in your head and you just chuckle. This is an example of some of the good writing that's in here. There's also a lot
It's great that he, like, in that scene in particular, it's on display that he is on solid footing within his personality. Like, he's throwing some sass back. Like, he's in this weird world where he's super, like, outside of his element, because clearly he's just a hippie who wants to be left alone so he can bowl and drink White Russians and get high and stuff. But he's thrown into this topsy-turvy world where he's like a private investigator now, but he's still just, you know, he's still just being the dude the whole time. He's not like, amped up, ready to fight all the time. He's just, he's still sarcastic and being himself. It's, I don't know. It's good to watch, but yeah, that scene in particular.
Yeah. And like you said, he says everything that's, you would expect that character to say in the moment. There are other parts of this film that I don't feel are as well written. Like some of the slurs, and I know it's a joke that, you know, they're saying in the movie that it's politically incorrect to use that kind of slur, but it's still, the punchline of the joke is the slur. So I don't love that part. So while I like a lot of the writing in here, I will say there are a couple little notes I would have. I'd be like, is this the joke? You know, circle with a red pen. Like, is that where the joke was, where you could take it to its fullest conclusion? But yeah, that's for the most part, though, the writing is pretty clever, especially with the exchanges between the dude's character and the people around him. And while, you know, while structurally I have some issues with this movie, like the first part is interesting, and you get this nice world building setup that lets you in on exactly who all these people are and introduces you to the scenario that he finds himself in. And then you get the problem part of it, where he's trying to solve the problem, and then he solves the problem, and then the movie just keeps going. And I don't like the part where it just keeps going. Like, once he confronts Lebowski at the end, it's like, okay, you've gone through a full arc. Everything here is solved. Mission accomplished. But then the movie just keeps going.
You don't like the nihilist fight scene in the parking lot?
No, I especially don't like it. And I don't feel like it gives us any, like, real closure, because we already know that the girl who is with the nihilists at the diner has a missing toe as the audience. So we're just there to listen to the nihilists tell the dude about where the source of the missing toe was, and then they fight, and then Donnie dies.
But well, Donnie, there's a little more to it in that scene. Like, yes, Donnie dies. That's obviously the thing that most people remember happens in that. But I think this is the first scene where Walter really, like, shows that he is a friend of these guys, because the whole time he's been berating Donnie and he's been very argumentative. But he's in this scene, he's being, well, he's just being very John Roderick and telling stories about World War II or something. And he's being very, like, fatherly and reassuring to Donnie when these weirdos come up to them in the parking lot. So I like the way it sort of evolves the dynamic between the friends right before Donnie dies, at least.
Yeah, but they kill Donnie, and then we go to the crematorium, or whatever, where the funeral service is, where Donnie's body has been cremated.
Mortuary.
Yeah, and they debate the vessel to put him inside of, and then they throw him into the wind and stuff. And it's like, did that really feel like it was paying off something in the picture?
Is this really a setup and payoff kind of movie, though?
No, but see, that's it. Just, it felt like the movie just kept going, and then it's like, okay. And then now we'll have Sam Elliott talk again.
Yeah. I mean, you know? to be fair, like, after confronting the Big Lebowski and throwing him on the floor, I feel like there's only maybe like 10 minutes left of the movie where all these other three scenes happen. But yeah, you're right. They're just kind of like after the fact stuff that continues. But, you know, it's you see the dude's got his spirits back up, and him and Walter are still still keeping on or whatever.
Yeah. And theoretically, we could have had a sequel about Baby Lebowski.
Oh boy. is it weird that it's going to have the last name Lebowski, even though they're not related, but it's weird because they're both Lebowskis already.
Oh, I get what you mean.
Lebowski, yes. And Jeffrey Lebowski had a baby Lebowski.
Yeah. I mean, anyway. There's a very high probability that they are distantly related.
Lebowski is not a super common name.
No. But, you know, that's on Maud, whatever she was thinking in that moment. But, I mean, to go back to the beginning of this, though, like I said, sure. Structurally, I really like the opening to this. I like that we get this surreal tumbleweed going through parts of Los Angeles to the beach and into the water. Because, as you well know, we don't get a lot of tumbleweeds around these parts. And we especially don't get tumbleweeds that seem to be going down a very empty street in Los Angeles at any time of day or night. We get this nice narration, and we get the introduction to the dude buying the half and half with his checkbook, and we see what a loser he is without him even needing to say anything. It's very clear.
I don't know. He's not a loser. He's not down on himself per se. I think he knows and likes who he is in life.
Dan.
Hmm.
That's not enough. I can still judge somebody just by looking at them.
No, you're allowed to judge him. I don't think he qualifies for loser though, because he's perfectly okay with his status in life.
Yes, he doesn't want to win, so he can't lose. But
yeah. It's like you can't take from him something he doesn't have.
Yeah. Touche.
come after my dignity. Joke's gonna be on you because I have none.
This person who is ambivalent about his dignity is, you know, at a Ralph's.
Really, he just really wanted his rug back is all.
Yeah, well, he gets it taken from him. I like the way it's actually directed when he goes back to his place and he gets shoved into the toilet. The guys doing the harassment don't really seem very bright about what they're doing. But this somehow causes him to pursue the only other person that he can find named Lebowski, and complain about this stuff, which is what gets him ensnared in the whole morass that is this convoluted plot by Lebowski to take money from the foundation that Maud runs. In order to get Bunny back, even though he doesn't actually want Bunny back, he just thinks Bunny left.
Do you think he had the plan to do that before he met the dude, or did he just see an opportunity? Because shortly after he met the dude, Bunny ran off.
I think it was that. What I don't understand though is the nihilist, Peter Stormare. He carefully observed at some point the nail polish that Bunny had just recently applied, even though he was like passed out in that pool. That was him in the pool, right?
Yes, that was him. He may have just like, you know, over the course of being around the house, just like grabbed it and took it.
Yeah. And she goes missing, but he, for some reason, decides that this will be his way to exploit money out of Lebowski too, which just happens to be coincidental with Lebowski also deciding that he's going to have a ransom. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It would have maybe been a little more tidy had it been a situation where Stormare was in on it, but then had decided he wanted to keep the money or something, rather than just two people deciding they were going to pretend that she had been kidnapped and one of them was going to be the kidnapper and the other one was going to be the one paying the ransom. And
it's possible that the Big Lebowski could have roped Stormare into play that role and then just not told him that there was not going to be any money in the briefcase.
Yeah.
Carl Hung. That's such a good name. Uli Kunkel / Carl Hungus.
Mm-hmm. But I like the scene where they order pancakes at the diner. That's nice.
Lingonberry pancakes and the pigs and blanket.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I think that's the Mel's on Sunset. And I know when Walter and Lebowski are arguing that they're at the Johnny's, which isn't mm-hmm. even a real restaurant over on Fairfax and Wilshire.
Yeah,
you can even see the old May department store building behind them, which is going to be the new Motion Picture Academy, whatever museum thing.
Oh, I did not realize that.
Yeah, that's where they're gonna put it. They've been working on it for like years and years and years and years and years and years and years, and it's been delayed.
Are they getting rid of the what's over there with the car coming out of the building?
Peterson Automotive Museum.
No, isn't it Johnny Rockets or whatever that has like a car above the door?
No, I think you're thinking of something else.
Well, there's one like that. Maybe it's a block south of there.
Yeah, there's an automotive museum which had cars all over the outside of it. And that was renovated with a weird red metal wrap thing on the building. The May department store building is next to LACMA, and that has been vacant for a really long time. And
I see. I'm looking at it on Google Maps. I see the scaffolding covering the building and a little sign that says Academy Museum.
Yep. Yeah, that's where it's going to go. There's a lot of news items this week in particular about it because they had a press event where they showed off models and what the thing was going to be about. And apparently the first exhibit is going to be about the work of Miyazaki because they didn't want it to seem too inward-looking on Hollywood. They wanted it to appear more international. So good job with that one. But apparently like the entrance to the museum is going to be a recreation of the Stargate from Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey. I guess that's going to be like projected on walls as you walk through a corridor or something like that. But I don't know. I have a hard time believing that Stanley Kubrick would have been like super jazzed about that.
No, that doesn't sound like a thing they should do. But whatever, they're the Academy.
Yeah, but that's neither here nor there. It's just a funny thing to recognize the location.
What is that? What is this giant metal brain looking building across the street?
That's the Peterson Automotive Museum.
Oh, okay.
It used to have a bunch of cars on the outside of the museum. It was just like a plain box with a bunch of cars dangling off of it. And then they decided to make it classy, and they made that weird metal brain, as you put it, pattern.
Very unusual looking.
It's very unusual. I think it looks hideous, but some people disagree.
I'm glad the Johnny's is still there, although it's seen better days, it looks like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how often do you need to film in an old diner?
In Los Angeles? Probably a lot. I mean, you know, Quentin Tarantino's entire career. Oh, look at that. It's Google Street View. You tilt up above Johnny's and there's a Ready Player One billboard. Anyway, we'll close that now. Yeah, every time I see that particular scene, I always end up looking in the background, too, to see like what I can discern of the fact that it is like a permanent diner location.
Yeah, and speaking of locations, they're up in the Beverly Hills hills, the actual hills, not the flat part where I am, where the poor people are. Up in the hills, there's...
The poor people of Beverly Hills.
Yeah. Well, there's down and out in Beverly Hills and the slums of Beverly Hills. Wasn't that the one with Natasha What's-Her-Face in it? But anyway, up in the hill part, there's the Greystone Manor, which is where Big Lebowski's house is.
Oh, right. His house is in Greystone. Is Greystone also Beverly Hills Cop Playboy Mansion, or is that a different one? The one with all the wood paneling.
I think it is. I can't remember. But there's a ton of stuff that's been filmed at Greystone. That is a manor by the Doheny oil magnate family. So that's fun.
Was it you that found that website that showed a bunch of like before and after images of like scenes from the movie and then like still images shot of what the house looks like without that stuff in it? I remember one specifically for Big Lebowski, looking mostly at that room where they throw the Big Lebowski on the floor. It shows that it's kind of just like a room that you pass through to go to like the backyard or something. It's not really like a study or whatever. They put like bookcases and stuff up against to cover a lot of the doors, so it looked like it was a more enclosed room.
No, I was not the person who found that website, although I'd be interested in seeing it. I've never actually been inside Greystone because it's not open to the public except for weird tour times, which they usually have like in the middle of a day on a Tuesday because they're jerks, and they know that the only people who are going to go are going to be... Yeah, it's just like, why are you doing that, guys? And sometimes they have special musical events there, but it's like a four-person like string quartet kind of a thing, and it's just like, but I don't want to.
We should find some people who are affiliated with very large production companies in Los Angeles to see if they can get us in there for a tour.
Well, I think there are some days that they do like tours, but they're like architectural whatever things. But no,
I like architecture.
Yeah, I mean, me too, but. It's very expensive to do anything at Greystone, to shoot there or to do events for, like, a lot of people get married. They have weddings out in the gardens.
Didn't we look this up?
Yeah, because you were looking for a mansion to shoot something, and I jokingly sent that to you because I knew it was expensive. And you couldn't afford it on your budget, but
yeah, I think wasn't it like $30,000 a day just to be on the property or something? I can't even remember. I know I put it together
because you need like they require insurance and security and what was it, like a fire personnel person or something? I don't remember.
Like, all your standard production stuff to make sure nothing goes horribly wrong. But yeah, just their base level like location permit was it started at like $12,000 just to step foot in the place.
Yeah, it's. Very expensive.
What the hell was I trying to shoot that I needed to... Oh, that thing. Yeah, that never manifested. It was a short film, too, so the idea of spending, like, $30,000 on a single day of location was a terrible idea.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing that you did not do that. But anyway, the Coen brothers could afford it, and they did it. And it looks nice. I like all the location shooting stuff that they did. And I like Jackie Treehorn's place, although I don't know where the...
I really like Jackie Treehorn's place. I love the couches that are, I guess they look like they're permanently affixed to the place because they're made out of concrete, but I like the interlocking trapezoidal cushions on the couch that go alternating directions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I really
like that look.
Very, you know, it's a very modern house, California all the way.
Huh? Yeah. Is this your ad for California?
Yes, yes. Come to California. It's drizzling, but it'll be fine tomorrow. That's my good ad.
It's a little
for
chilly.
California.
You can have some soup and a White Russian.
Yeah, yeah. It's 53 degrees outside right now.
It's 62 here. It's been very cold the past couple of days here, but tonight was surprisingly warm.
Oh, must be nice. I wouldn't know because I live in a place with seasons, but.
No, you have one season. You have summer.
Summer, and then I have cold and damp for a couple days. But yeah, there's
Sheets
that.
Goldstein residence. Hollywood Hills is Jackie Treehorn's place.
Yeah, because they say Malibu in the picture, but it doesn't look like Malibu.
Well, I guess there's the scene where Treehorn sort of walks in off of the beach there, which could theoretically be Malibu, but it's mm-hmm. not.
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, wow. This is Benedict Canyon. Does that sound like something you're familiar with?
Yeah. I drive through Benedict Canyon sometimes to come home.
Well, that's where it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's up there.
Benedict Canyon's very nice.
You should go there.
Well, I've been there. I told you just that I drive through it.
No, I mean to the house.
Oh, to the house. Just break into
their
house.
Yeah, go to the house. There's a lot of glass. I'm sure there's some points of egress. Oh, wow. The Google Maps Street View, they did one of those, the indoor things, and it's planted right in the middle of the room there.
Oh.
Where there are a bunch of rubber mats all over the floor, presumably to curb people from getting the carpet dirty. But it all looks exactly the same. You got your brown leather things there. You got your pool.
Wait,
a very nice overlook.
So wait, Dan.
Yeah,
Dan.
Yeah.
Is this actually still a residence, or has it been converted into some sort of museum or preserved property.
I'm glad
of some
you
kind.
Asked, and I'm going to say that slowly while I click the Wikipedia page. Home designed and built between 61 and 63. The Beverly Crest neighborhood of Los Angeles. Oh God, I don't know. It appears to be more of just a tourist destination at this point, but in 2016, the LACMA announced it was entrusted to them as a gift, apparently. So
wow.
It's owned by them.
It's a heck of a tax write-off. So that's interesting. I wonder if that means you can go on tours there.
I would think so.
We should arrange. We should find a day where we can do Greystone and the Jackie Treehorn place, and we should just do one day tour. They're not far away from each other. That'd be nice.
I would be happy to dress like the dude and go here. Although it really doesn't look that much larger than that main room / backyard that is featured in the movie.
Mm. It just really kind of looked like one giant room, and then
yeah,
you couldn't really see the rest of the place. Yeah.
Ooh, look at all of these. Yeah, we should definitely do that. You want to do just like a Lebowski tour, or you want to just go see all of the various? I guess Greystone qualifies as a lot of different things.
Yeah. We could just say the bigger than Lebowski tour, because it'd be a couple things. we went in the Bradbury building that one time.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. Our tour guide pointed out that the area was really, you know,
it was very popular in
the
1920s. Do you think they would let us do a live podcast from within this triangular, unusual building?
I don't think that the acoustics of an enormous concrete cavernous room would be good.
Well, they managed to sort it out for the Big Lebowski. Just get a bunch of sound blankets down on the ground and around you.
Just make a little blanket fort inside the LACMA property.
You can't really see right now that we're inside this beautiful building because we've intended you in blankets.
Yes.
Intent is not a word.
Was that intentional?
It was intentional to capture one within a tent of blankets.
That's nice, I guess. But the locations are really interesting. I think they filmed some good stuff. I don't know where the bowling alley is, but I like the neon 6-point stars and stuff. It's very googie.
I always like the way the building fades out in those stay.
Yeah, it's and we should mention, of course, that everybody's favorite cinematographer is on this one. He does a good job, especially with the dream sequences. I really love the dream sequences. They are surreal and delightful, unexpected. And I think that they still pretty much hold up, in terms of the visuals of them. Like when he's staring down that enormous bowling ball, and he's supposed to be a tiny little person.
I definitely did not need to look it up, but when you say everyone's favorite cinematographer, you are of course speaking of Roger Deakins.
Yes. Who else? Claudio Miranda.
That's funny. Because that's that other guy.
Yeah, the other guy.
You know they filmed a portion of Charlie's Angels Full Throttle at this triangular building.
Oh, that's why it looks familiar. But
I don't remember which portion of Charlie's. I haven't seen that movie maybe more than
like
once.
Like Demi Moore is inside, and it was been a long time. She's like got a gun and she's going to shoot the angels, I think.
Yeah, she does turn out to be the bad guy of that movie, if I recall. Spoiler alert, sorry guys. is that where she resided in the movie?
She resided there, but
they tracked her down there.
No, there's an action scene that takes place there, and isn't that Crispin Glover is in that, right?
Crispin Glover's in both of them.
Oh, Jesus.
He's the creepy thin man in the first one, and I believe he's kind of pseudo on their side in the second one, but he also like doesn't talk and still likes to tear her hair out of the women and smell it.
Yikes.
Yeah, he's you know, he's an unusual man on his own.
Yeah.
And then he plays that interesting character there.
We should do the Charlie's Angels movies sometime.
Oh, we should definitely not do that. Do you remember in the first one? It's the first one, right? Where you got what's his name playing the shirtless Irish guy? What the hell's that guy's name?
Unclear. I don't know what you're talking about.
The guy from the Leftovers.
I don't know. It's been like 20 years since I've seen this.
God, he's the writer guy. He was in The Girl on the Train. Girl on the Train. You know who I'm talking about.
Sure. That's why I'm saying his name right now, because I totally know it.
Guy. Not Emily Blunt. Oh, my God. Justin Theroux.
He's Irish?
He plays an Irish guy in the movie. he plays Drew Barrymore's ex-boyfriend, who's an Irish mob guy, and he's always sweaty and greasy with spiky hair and doesn't have a shirt on, and he's very creepy, but Justin Theroux in real life is quite funny.
Yes, he's definitely none of those things.
He writes a lot of things. Are you familiar with the things that he writes?
No. Are you getting him confused with Henry Theroux?
No. he wrote Tropic Thunder. Wrote the screenplay for Iron Man 2. He wrote the screenplay for Rock of Ages.
What?
Yeah, he's behind the scenes on a lot more things than you would really realize.
Well, that's kind of crazy because, I mean, I don't really... I'd say with the exception of Tropic Thunder, I don't think any of those are particularly well written. And for Tropic Thunder, I have some notes. Well,
it's like you wouldn't have pictured Tropic Thunder being written by...
By Justin Theroux.
Justin
no.
Theroux. Yeah, no.
But we have sidetracked.
Yeah.
Once
the DJ
once more.
In Zoolander. Remember the dreadlocked DJ?
Yeah. Also, Justin Theroux was Bryce in American Psycho, right?
Yes. Yes, yeah. He was.
Yeah, but the dude. And so we get the setup with the stuff at the, you know, rug peeing and confrontation about things and the setup of Bunny and her toes. And it's cleverly done so that when we see a toe later and it has green nail polish on it, we instantly know whose nail it is. And consequently whose toe and consequently what body that toe came from. Although it's a trick. But that's
it's a trick of the toe.
Yeah. It's all pretty well constructed there for how these things pay off. It's just, you know, the overall thing of like how these people are working against one another kind of, but in a way that works together narratively is interesting. You know, we get Maude and the whole thing with them, and then the thing with the detective, which is his name John Polito? I can't remember, but
Yes.
Thin mustache guy, as seen in The Rocketeer, etc.
John Polito playing a character named Defino.
Yes, yes. He's the private detective who is in here for some reason, seemingly just to kick up the paranoia for Lebowski. But
he's trying to recruit Fawn Knutson back to the farm. But as I say, how are you gonna go back to the family farm after you've seen Carl Hungus? I always forget that the female Nihilist who loses her toe is Amy Mann.
Oh, that's her?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. She looks real different in this.
Yeah, I think that's probably the point. But the casting in this is also good.
Yeah.
Really is sort
Flea?
Of your sorry?
Flea.
Flea, as you pointed out, Flea's butt crack after he gets stomached with the bowling ball.
Yeah, I mean, you really linger on it too, which I don't know why anyone needed that.
He's crawling on the ground. There was I should find this. I don't know why it just came to mind now. This is the 20-year anniversary of Big Lebowski, and there was a Hollywood Reporter or something had all three of them together and was just sort of talking to him about it for 10-15 minutes about the legacy of things and memories.
Wait,
and
when you say all three, which all three?
You know, the dude, Walter, and Donnie.
Okay. See, Dan?
Yeah. The three dudes, the three guys, the bowlers.
We literally were not talking about any of them in the previous sentence. So
I know, but they're the three guys. Yes. When you talk about, you got to grab the three guys from the Big Lebowski and talk to them a little bit. It's going to be Walter, Donnie, and the dude.
Right. I wanted some clarification. Because it would have been weird if they had gathered Peter Stormare, Flea, and whoever the other guy was.
The Nihilists together to reflect on 20 years of the Big Lebowski. How have the past 20 years been not caring about anything? How's that working out for you?
Yeah. Oh, man. That would have been great if they did it in character. But, I like the Nihilist stuff, because it's just such a funny, weird tangent. And the thing about them having a band, and the cover that they have for the album is so perfect. Yeah. And how that figures into his dream sequence is fantastic. Because you would think that that's just kind of a throwaway joke to have the album cover, but then to actually have them in the costumes in the dream is a nice payoff.
Additionally, in
that
sort of like the red spandex onesie that comes up over his head when he's got the scissors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so good.
But that's the costume I'm referring to.
Yeah, well, on the album cover, I thought they had like red lipstick, but weren't they wearing just like black and white checkered clothing or something?
No, I think they were in the red onesies.
Mm.
And there was a like a black and white grid thing behind them.
Yeah, maybe.
But
I don't remember.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's just really nice how that ties into it. And the whole thing with Maud, I don't know why he gets punched out, and then it's, you know, not continued really in any meaningful way, because the beeper's going off when he wakes up and he does some other stuff, but it's like, why did Maud have him get punched out, I guess? Unclear.
Well, you know, she had to at least let him know that it was not right for him to take the rug that belonged to her.
Yeah. But they, you know, he does the whole thing with the art scene, and I like the introduction there where you're concentrating on his feet and you see the little dribble of green stuff and you don't know what that is. And the slow terror that is performance art, as she swings in on her girdle swing thing, flinging paint everywhere. That's all nice. It's a good payoff. And it's a great introduction to how eccentric she is. And you know, it's a fantastic scene in terms of them bouncing off of one another. The scene where she shows up at his place and just demands sex is a little less well put together.
Johnson?
Hmm.
Yeah, I like Maud. I'm not entirely certain what to make of her motivations as a character throughout the movie or in life, but she's nicely eccentric.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I've ever really, like, I guess with the exception of True Grit, I can't say that I've ever really thought that a woman that the Coen brothers have written for a female character has, like, been exceptionally well conceived.
Mm.
But I do like you know, our protagonist in True Grit, so I would say she would be the exception. Also, of course, not a lot of representation in terms of anyone of any other skin color as a main character in their works, but you know, it's neither here nor there.
Well, that is accurate and a fair point worth bringing up, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it's just something I think about every time I watch a Coen Brothers movie, and it's like, it's delightful and it's good casting, but it's like, isn't it interesting that they write and direct all of these and all of them are cast a certain way, I guess, but whatever. I mean, it's fine here. I wouldn't necessarily seek to substitute anyone, because obviously I love Steve Buscemi and John Goodman and the dude, Jeff Bridges, but it's just a peculiarity of the accumulated work that they have, that they have managed that. But
question for you with regard to Walter specifically. I think one of the things they brought up in that video, which I still don't really know where I saw that, but I should find it again. Do you think Walter was actually in Vietnam?
I am not sure, because
now he has a jacket that says Army and Subject on it, so he's mm-hmm. either very committed to his role, or he actually was. But I'm curious if you have an opinion on the matter.
Well, it's entirely possible that he was in Vietnam or involved with the Army during the period Vietnam was occurring, but that he may not have been deployed on front lines or may not have been involved in any real fighting or something. He might have been, you know, like some supplier guy, you know, or doing inventory or something, or a reservist here somewhere being trained before the war ended. So he might have, made more of it than he necessarily experienced. Although he does cite some specific people that have died, so at least he seemed to have some acquaintances in terms of, like, at the end of the movie when he's eulogizing Donnie by talking about people who died in Vietnam, which is not, as the dude points out, especially great for remembering Donnie. But it could go any of multiple directions. And I like that it's not nailed down, because I don't really need an answer for that. He's kind of mysterious in that way.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do need an answer for what his security business could possibly be.
His security business?
Yeah, on the side of his van. So it was going to say, like, Salt-Check Private Security or something like that.
Oh, does it? I honestly don't think I've ever noticed that.
I thought he did private security, but
it very well may be the case. You know, there again, this is another one of those movies we talk about. There, you watch it a million times and you discover something new every single time. I just start looking in random different places when watching it now, because there are so many things in the scene, or actions, or just lines that you hear. Like, ever since Merlin pointed out that Walter says "huh" a lot, like in response to a lot of different people, like that line was written into the script that he shouts "huh." And mm-hmm. I can't help but hear the dozens of times that is yelled back and forth in this movie now. And all of the, you know, you got your Coens doing their "well, okay then," and Walter's "am I wrong" repeatedly. But there are so many little bits and pieces that just fall through the cracks, because it is still too dense with interesting things. And I don't know. Is it the fact that the movie has become the cult classic that suddenly all of these things have more meaning to them, or is it that the movie really is that dense and it just takes that much time to see what's going on there?
I don't know. I mean, there's a density to it in terms of the decisions that have been made by all of the people, the actors, the directors, production design, cinematography, everything. Like, it's not accidental.
It seems to be put together with an amount of care that is exceptional for a movie of this scale.
Yeah, well, but I feel like there's a lot of care specifically within scenes, and I feel like there's less care, like, as like some sort of cohesive, we meant to do this all along kind of a thing. Does that make any sense?
I think.
Like, I feel like everything in any particular scene is well composed and well thought out. I feel like the way the characters play off of each other is consistent within the scene. I feel like the production design works. The cinematography all makes sense geographically. You never get confused with where the camera is and where the people are. It's all well done. But in terms of, there is like some sort of subliminal message through the perfection that is this film. No, I don't see that panning out. Hidden code that can come out of putting all these scenes together.
Well, there's clearly enough theme throughout to turn it into an actual religion, but it may not be the case that they were, I don't know. So you probably don't play it backwards and hear like Paul is dead or something.
Mm-hmm. So did you see the image I sent you?
Oh, yes. I did see that. You are correct. It says subcheck security. I did not see that before.
Yep. Who's right?
I guess it's Joe's just right. I'm too excited to see the chat with Defino.
Mm.
Stay away from his lady friend. He's not a special lady, he's a lady friend.
Also, speaking of care and attention to detail,
mm-hmm.
I love that it is not a mistake that Walter says Pomeranian when the dog is obviously not a Pomeranian.
You know, the other thing that I pointed out at this point is this time when I'm watching it, because Amanda came in for the end of it, is when he says the quote at the end, you know, sometimes you eat the bar, sometimes the bar eats you. Am I correct that he's misquoting Sam Elliott from earlier who said bear, but he's got a thick accent, so he thought he said bar? Because obviously, sometimes you eat the bar makes no sense.
Yeah.
Sometimes you eat the bear, and sometimes the bear eats you. That makes sense.
But he likes drinking, level. So...
You think it was a drunken stumble?
Maybe. It's a drunken Freudian slip. I have no idea. But it's certainly interesting.
I feel like it's just another one of those like in-world things where it's a mistake, but it's a mistake that the characters would have honestly made. But it's, again, like putting all of those things together after having seen the movie, I don't know, several dozen times. It's mm-hmm. still surprising.
Yeah.
Did you still enjoy it? How many times have you seen this movie? You have to have seen this movie a bunch of times, right?
Oh, yeah. But I have to say that this is a college era movie for me. This is something I was introduced to in college, that I watched a lot in college. Something that I had some coworkers at Sony when I started who were really into it. And
do you remember the exact first time you saw it?
No. It was not in theaters. It was on home video. But I've seen it a few times since then, but not in probably, I would say, 5 years, maybe. And it's not because I don't like it or anything, but I just hadn't felt the compulsion to do it. And what's weird about
it is... You're also not like a person like me that just catches stuff on TV.
No, I'm not a person like you that just catches stuff on TV. But what was weird about it is there's so much... that I thought I remembered. Like, I thought in my mind that I didn't need to revisit the movie because I remembered it so clearly. Yeah, but then I watched it, and I was just like, I don't remember anything that's happening in this scene. Like, I completely forgot Tara Reid was Bunny Lebowski. Like, just for some reason, that had escaped my mind. And I had forgotten everything about the end of the film, past the plan being exposed. I completely forgot Donnie died. I was just like, what was happening? God. Is this like an extended version?
How do you forget about poor Theodore Donald Caravatos?
I don't know. Maybe I blocked it out because it was a painful memory, because I wanted him to still be alive.
We all took the loss of Donnie pretty hard. It's true.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's basically one of the weirder things about it, is like, I felt like I had this understanding of the film, but what I really had an understanding of was just like the scenes with Maude, I guess. And that's all I basically remembered in hindsight. Because when I revisit it, I definitely have, there's so much more rich detail in here that had completely dripped out of my brain. So I'm glad that we rewatched it for this.
Yeah. I mean, you come away with a feeling of like who the dude is and who maybe Walter is, but yeah, a lot of the individual goings on throughout the film, you forget. I mean, at least I remember Walter pulling the gun on Smokey over the line, etc. Those sorts of things. But there's still stuff in this movie that I am discovering.
What did you think of Smokey's ADR?
There's a fair amount of ADR in places in here. Smokey just doesn't really move his mouth.
No, Smokey does not enunciate well enough, so they need to do Smokey's lines again.
He's got emotional problems. He's a pacifist. I did not know that. He just tosses his bowling ball in the backseat of the car. How do you create characters that are so vivid? Because again, if the things that you take away from this movie are just sort of the feeling that you understand and know these characters, it's like, how do you make characters like this? It's unbelievable.
No, but this is what they're known for, is like the character stuff. And
I can't think of another character I like as much as the characters from this movie. Like, I'm sure there are probably plenty. Mm-hmm. That's probably over exaggeration to say these are the best characters, but I don't know. These are definitely up there.
Yeah. They really have a way of making you believe that the characters that they're writing have a life that extends outside of the film in a way that many other writers don't. A lot of times, like, you know, I wouldn't criticize everything that they're saying as being extraneous or without point. You know, it's not like everything needs to be, you know, a Chekhov gun leading towards the end of the film. But
very few things, in fact, actually lead towards the end of the film.
Yeah, but because of all of the things they say, it makes you feel like they are characters who will live after the film concludes and who were living before the film started. You get a sense that this is, as ridiculous as it is, this is their lives.
These are their lives.
Like sands through the hourglass.
And they're ending
so
one minute
are these
at a time.
Of our lives.
This is the bowling round of our life. You know, I'm a little disappointed that nobody appeared to have any onion rings, which, as you are aware, it is my opinion that you can't go bowling without a pitcher of domestic draft beer and onion rings. I guess they're professional bowlers, though. They're not really doing it for leisure like I do.
I mean, I've never really... Well, I haven't bowled at a bowling alley in a very incredibly long time. So last time I did it, I was at I think it was a summer camp where they had a bowling lane, two bowling lanes, which is weird because they didn't have like a full bowling alley. It was just two lanes inside of the basement of this camp. And it had bumpers in one and then no bumpers on the other one. And so, of course, I used the one with bumpers because I play it like billiards. So I kind of bounce.
You like to bank your shots?
Yeah, I bank the bowling ball off the bumpers into the pins. I was really good at it too, but I could not, for the life of me, master just rolling the ball straight down the lane.
Well, I was gonna say you're a very tall man, not very, but you're a tall man, and you've got nice long arms. You could probably put some good spin on the ball to do sort of that banking effect without the actual bumpers nowadays.
That's possible, except I'm just inept when it comes to that kind of coordination.
Oh, you just throw it really hard and spin it, and then you kind of sort of figure out, all right, where do I start it to spin it, and how hard do I spin it, and if it hurts your elbow too much, then you're probably spinning it too much. Like that's how I roll the ball.
Great. You give instructions like my dad does when he would explain sports stuff to me.
You take a step up there, you throw it real hard, you spin it real good, and if your elbow hurts, probably spun it too hard.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You really cleared that one up.
I am everyone's sports dad. I'll tell you how to do a thing. Like the time I told Ryan I would teach him how to throw a curveball, and he got really mad.
Why did you say that?
I don't remember. I may have texted it to him, but it was a long time ago. Maybe it was on Twitter. I can't remember. He got really mad because he played baseball too as a youngin. So basically, the moral of your story is, aside from the fact that you went to a creepy camp with a bowling alley in the basement,
it was like a Baptist summer camp thing. Because we were not Baptist; we were Catholic. Which I don't know. Who wants to rank that? My mom was looking for a summer camp to put us in because she couldn't take care of us during the day because she's a single mother working a job. So we wound up at this Baptist summer camp, and it was extremely strange. In the basement area, well, it wasn't even like the basement. It was just like they had steps to go up to the first floor on the outside of the building. So then there was a first floor that was actually on the ground, which was basically the basement when you were in the lobby of the thing.
A bit of an old split level kind of thing.
Well, yeah, this is Florida. You can't really like dig into the ground because you
get
water.
Right, your basement walkout or whatever they call those things.
Yeah, so they had two bowling lanes down there, and it was very weird. But that was basically, I think, the last time I bowled. And I have no ambition to go bowling. Like, there's near Jason's apartment, there's a place called Bolero, spelled bowl like bowling, but then with the ERO, like the actual Bolero. But that thing apparently is very hip and trendy and bad. Also, I have this phobia about using bowling shoes. I don't want to put on shoes that other people were wearing.
I mean, you know, you're allowed to wear socks, right?
Yeah, but sock. What is that, Dan? A sock is a semi-permeable cotton membrane. It's just going to take all the germs with it, and then it's going to put those germs into my shoes.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, you don't have to wear the bowling shoes. It's not like a law. They're not going to kick you out of the place. Or you could just get your own bowling shoes. They're not that expensive.
Well, yes, that's what I want to do, is invest in something I'm not very good at, so that I can do more of it.
You're not good at it because you haven't invested in it. do you additionally have a phobia of putting your hands in the ball?
No, because I can wash my hands.
Are we going to need to get you some nitrile gloves to wear while you're rolling the bowling ball?
No, I can wash my hands at the bowling alley.
Wash your feet when you get home, too.
Yeah, but you're not going to, like, launder your shoes, you know, Dan.
So you're concerned about not only the fact that you're putting your feet and socks in dirty shoes, but the transference of that shoe's dirtiness into your real shoes.
Yes. That's exactly what I'm saying.
What if you were to, like, put your hands in your pocket after having rolled a bowling ball? You've contaminated your pants.
Right, which is why I don't put my hands in my pocket. I don't touch anything. You should have seen me at the LA Auto Show last weekend, Dan. I didn't touch a friggin' thing after I touched the cars, and I was just using my pinky as much as possible to, like, open car doors, so that I wouldn't be. Because I swear to God, if you see, like, the little kids just running around with their grubby hands, just, like, grabbing everything, like, you can see the handprints on the windows, and they have people who come by every, like, half hour, and they're, like, cleaning these things that work for the car companies because they want them to look nice if somebody were to take a photo or whatever. So the fact that you can see oil buildup from hands between a half hour increment is not a good sign. And you know those kids aren't washing their hands, because kids never wash their hands. And so there's just like a giant germ bomb. I'm surprised I'm not already ill.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is it safe to say that you would probably vomit on yourself if you saw me eating onion rings at a bowling alley?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. By the way, for reference, apparently we have the Bolero branded bowling alley party venue and sports bar here in Phoenix.
Congratulations. It's the top Scottsdale golf bowling, I hear.
Gilbert, and a couple other places. Anyway, so you have not bowled in your adult life then. So you can't have experienced the drinking in the bowling alley.
No, but I have a white Russian here, which is mostly melted.
There is something. You got to experience the joy that is going to a bowling alley that smells like cigarettes, even though smoking inside of a bowling alley has been banned for the past like 15 years, and having some very cheap, very see-through beer while you throw balls at pins and talk to your friends.
Well, I guess, but I do other things too, so.
Sure.
That's fine.
Sure. I'm putting a line in the sand saying I am on this side of voting for the next Defocus meetup to be a group bowling session.
Okay. Am I supposed to be on the other line of the sand?
It sounds like you want to be, but I am voting for defocused bowling.
Defocus your bowls.
Defocus your. I was going to say the other thing. we could do one lane with pins with bumpers. They still offer those, I think.
Yeah, for like the kids, I don't want to be embarrassed. I want to just go in there, not touch anything like a normal person, and bowl in the adult lanes and not miss so that I don't get embarrassed.
Well, okay. I don't think the point is necessarily to show off to the listeners and our friends that you know how to bowl.
It's not
the point is to be there and have an experience with people.
No. See, it's not about showing off. It's about not being the worst.
You won't be the worst because there will be people, particularly me, who are trying too hard and actively making it worse.
Okay. Also, I'm not going to eat there.
As long as you have a beer there, that's fine.
Okay.
Or maybe like eat a mozzarella stick before you bowl.
Okay. Well, yeah, but then I still want to wash my hands because I don't want the grease.
Well, of course, wash your hands.
I'm going to wash my hands before and after my mozzarella stick.
Just wash your hands. That's all.
I just want to wash my hands.
Just wash your hands.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I can already picture this event, and it's fabulous. I'm very excited for it. We could do it at that really fancy place in Highland Park that Rye hates.
Oh, good. Because what I really want to do on top of all of this is drive to the furthest bowling alley.
No, I'm kidding. No, you got to specifically go to a crappy one.
Yeah.
If we can find the one from the Big Lebowski, we should go to that one. But I'm not sure that still exists.
That might have been the one they renovated and turned into the Bolero. But I have
well,
no way
we'll
of knowing.
We'll go to the Bolero.
Yeah.
Hollywood Star Lanes on Santa Monica Boulevard?
No, that is not that. Well, where on Santa Monica Boulevard is that? Is it actually in Hollywood?
It is just east of the 101 on Santa Monica Boulevard. Well, yeah.
Yeah, so it's in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Okay. It might still be there and crappy.
Let me... I feel like it was renovated. I'm street viewing it. And it's facing the wrong direction because it always is.
Welcome to the Dan Street View Podcast.
Thank you. And I'm clicking and I'm moving and this does not look like a bowling alley. What... is going on here? There's a big pink building here.
So they could have painted the bowling alley pink.
Well, it just looks like a big pink industrial complex.
Oh. Well, that's what Eisenhower said when he left office, is beware the big pink industrial complex. Not to get too political.
I can't run with that because it's hidden in, behind this big pink building, and I can't see it in street view. This is very upsetting to me.
Okay,
show me the bowling alley.
All right. Well, you could use the satellites.
Yeah. Well, the satellites can only look straight down.
Mm-hmm.
Seems pretty limited, doesn't it?
Sure.
Maybe you can
design a better one. Yeah, Apple Maps and do flyover. You can see rendered lumpy thing that was maybe the building.
All right, I'll do it. Let me see. 5227 Santa Monica Boulevard.
I can't believe I was secretly
looking at the Back to the Future dirt spot while we were having a podcast.
Yes.
Good.
No, it wasn't. You were enthralled. But
I was. This does not look like the bowling alley to me.
Has it been torn down?
It might be a school now because it has a lot of things that look like shuffleboard and four square basketball lines and hopscotch painted on the concrete.
Okay, well, this is a mystery we can solve later at another time.
I guess. Oh, TM in the chat says it has been torn down. Thank you, TM, for your local knowledge of bowling alleys where Joe is letting me down. Because he doesn't know anything about bowling alleys. He hates bowling alleys.
Yes. My deep-seated fear of bowling alleys prevents me from looking up any information on bowling alleys during podcasts.
Oh, boy. What is it about your childhood that makes you fear bowling alleys quite so much?
Did you not hear where I said summer camp? Baptist summer camp? Anyway.
I promise we won't have any... Christ-like sermons during the bowling session.
Well, and no dudist doubt dudeism stuff. None of that.
Mm. I make no reassurances about taking
her.
Easy.
It looks like Bolero is your option. So just hop in your in the Merc in your Mercedes.
cruise all the way down.
Cruise on down. To good old Venice.
I would
Boulevard.
Be very impressed. It's running real well, but I'd be impressed if it made it all the way to Venice.
But wouldn't that be an interesting test?
Sure. I mean, it's a little loud and a little wobbly at highway speeds, given that it is 40 plus years old, but I'll give it a shot. I'll give it a shot.
Can you define wobbly?
It feels like the tires need some air.
Even
though I put air in them like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, do you maybe have a slow leak, like maybe from a nail or something?
It's possible that the tires are just very old because they have a lot of tread on them. For basically having been in the garage for the past 6 years.
Oh. Well, if you have a tiny puncture from like a nail, just go to Pep Boys. It's like $20.
I think we have Pep Boys. We got O'Reilly's over here. A lot of O'Reilly's is.
Well, I don't think they do tire patching.
No, probably not. We got a Big O on the corner.
That's nice. Did you ever watch the anime Big O?
The what?
It was an anime called Big O. It was a robot.
I know as much about anime as you know about bowling.
Okay. Well, touche.
Aha.
I challenge you to a meetup at the, I don't know.
You'll come to a bowling alley for a meetup for me, and then I will go to an anime convention for you.
No, because I won't be there.
Because you are deeply in love with anime.
Not true. Not in the
you heard
slightest.
Here first, people.
I'll meet you at the Miyazaki exhibition.
We can share our mutual love of all of the Miyazaki properties,
and then we can go to Johnny's afterwards.
Yes,
which won't let us in, and we'll just stare at it from the outside.
We'll stand outside waiting in line, like any other brunchy type place in Los Angeles.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. Sure.
I'm going to mark that as the end.
That works. TM put a thing in the chat that shows you all of the locations from the Big Lebowski on a map.
Oh, that's nice.
Curbed.
I like maps.
Is Curbed specific to Los Angeles? I know
no.
most.
But they have... are. Curbed and Eater are the same thing, basically, where one is... building stuff and architecture and location things, and then the other one is food stuff, but they have local offices basically throughout the US. So there's like a Curbed LA, Eater LA, Curbed New York, Eater New York, San Francisco, etc.
Curbed has Atlanta, Austin, Boston, Chicago, Detroit, Hamptons, Los Angeles, Miami, New Orleans, New York, Philadelphia, San Francisco, Seattle, and DC.
No Arizona.
No, you're missing a lot of landmarks.
They could have done the Bill and Ted tour.
Yeah, you got the Circle K. You know, that area has been getting a lot of updating because it's kind of like on the edge of an industrial complex / just fast food stuff over there. So I don't know if that Circle K is still there.
Is it an industrial complex or an office complex?
Industrial. There is the United Dairymen of America over there. There's the big milk factory.
milk factory?
There's a big milk factory about half a block from the Circle K where Bill and Ted landed.
Strange things are afoot at the milk factory.
I'm almost certain of it. You know, you got your rundown liquor stores. You got your gas stations that don't sell gas that just sort of have the front there. And then it rapidly turns into like one of those Arby's that looks like a spaceship. Like they've been updating the Wendy's and the Arby's to look really goofy looking.
I'm unaware of this trend. I haven't seen an Arby's in a long time.
Yeah, me neither. But you haven't seen any of the new, like, I guess they do it to McDonald's too, but the new Wendy's, they all have like, I don't know, they all have that like sort of like a fake wood grain tile on the outside. And they're like half glass, half wood looking. They look like Iron Man's Wendy's. They're very fancy. They have gas fireplaces inside, like the kind that the property brothers want to put in everyone's house. I know, it's very strange. They have Wi-Fi. It's they're very neat indoors.
That's really strange.
Yeah, it's like, you know, all of the displays are like plasma screens, and it's very unusual.
Hmm.
It's Wendy's.
Hmm. Hmm.
Bowl Arrow.
I used to like Wendy's. It was my let me think about this. There was a period where it was my preferred fast food restaurant because I liked the spicy chicken sandwich.
Yes.
Which is not really spicy, but just got a little zest.
You know, one of the things that when I worked at Intel, one of my coworkers turned me on to is he would get the spicy chicken sandwich and then he would get the packets of their, it was called chili sauce, which I believe was intended to be put on chili, not flavored with chilies, because it was just sort of like this vinegary clear sauce. And he would put that on the bottom, just soaked, it'd soak into the bun almost instantly. And then that would give you a little extra tang and zip in your chicken sandwich.
I'm not on board with that. I don't need to make their bun wetter.
Well, it has any particular crisp to it or anything.
I don't need wet buns for my meat, Dan, is what I'm saying.
I mean, it helps.
There you go.
Welcome to the after show, everyone. You don't need. I'm trying to, like, how come Bolera has like 1,000 pictures of like people in colorful clothing apparently having a good time at their place, but it doesn't show the friggin' bowling alley at all?
Because they probably paid for those.
It really is sort of like the Dave and Buster's of bowling alleys, isn't it?
That
Do you guys have Main Event out there?
No, I haven't heard of that one.
Main Event is this sort of like monster adult child complex that has like, it has like zip lines, it has bowling, it has video games, it's one giant building that just looks like a giant like rectangular IKEA building, but it's got all of the stupid things that adults would want to get drunk and do, and it's apparently very expensive. I've never gone. It's actually across from the IKEA.
Interesting.
Yeah, it seems like a travesty. It's like Dave and Buster's, but like four Dave and Buster's on the inside. I think it has laser tag as well. It's just a disaster.
I've never been in a Dave and Buster's either.
Oh my god!
We used to have a GameWorks.
GameWorks was the it was the best.
It was in Ybor City, which is the rundown cigar factory, part of Tampa.
Oh, in Tampa.
Yeah, in Tampa, in fancy Tampa. Tampa had originally got put on the map because there was this guy Ybor who wanted to make Cuban cigars for cheap. This is, of course, before, you know, Fidel Castro and all that other stuff. So that had nothing to do with it. It was just like he just wanted to make it cheaper. So he brought over a bunch of Cuban people, people from Italy, people from Germany, people from Spain, and put them all inside of tiny little shotgun houses and made them make cigars in Ybor City next to Tampa. It got really run down because, as you can imagine, the cigar industry has petered out a little bit over time.
Well, they've pivoted to vaping a bit.
Just a little bit. But it was pretty run down before that. So basically, you only go there to get, like, wasted. Like, there are bars up and down 7th, and everybody just goes there to get wasted. It kind of looks kind of New Orleans-esque with like a bunch of wrought iron brick buildings along that main avenue, but it's gross. So gross, because it's just bars and people getting drunk, and they have the Gasparilla Night Parade, which is kind of like Mardi Gras, sort of ish. Mainly just people are just smoking pot and getting drunk and then throwing beads, mainly leftover Mardi Gras beads. Like, they'll literally say Mardi Gras on them and they'll just throw them anyways, for Gasparilla. No respect for tradition. And then
that's really what tradition is missing is the respect.
Well, yeah. Well, especially when it comes to Gasparilla, the celebration of the infamous mythological pirate Jose Gaspar, who never existed. Tampa's so fucked up. But anyway, GameWorks was there because they tried to revitalize it and make like an area for people to hang out and stuff. So they had a movie theater and GameWorks and some other stuff. And there's an improv, as in the LA Improv. They had a Tampa one. The GameWorks, I think, is out of business, and it went out of business probably like 10 or 15 years ago. And it was great because nobody was ever there, which, when you're a teenager, is a plus, because that means you can use all the arcade machines that were that were around. And I was very good at Marvel versus Capcom 2.
Well, if it was a GameWorks, though, was your GameWorks like ours in that it had all of those like massive games that were like three stories tall and they would strap you into a chair that would move up and down and like all of those ones where you would be like, it would do like motion capture and like pretend that you were running around or shooting at stuff?
No, this was just an arcade.
It didn't have any of the big stupid games, though?
Nope. No. Huh. Just an arcade. It would have the stuff where you would like sit in like a simulator thing, but not any of that stuff you were describing.
Well, the GameWorks that we had here, it was put into the mall that they built. It was kind of like, ooh, futuristic mall of the future. It had a rainforest cafe in it or whatever. But like the highlight of it was this one game where you would like strap yourself into this chair and you were shooting at stuff, and it was like three stories high, so you would like blow up enough guys and get enough points, and you would go to the second story, and then like the third story, and then maybe there was a fourth story, and then if you killed all the bad guys before everyone else did, like you won, and then it would drop you all back down. So it was kind of like a ride in addition to a shoot 'em up game, but it was very stupid.
Sounds like laser tag cross with the Tower of Terror.
Yeah, kind of. Except you go up instead of down.
Mm-hmm. Well, you went down at the end.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about to go
down.
You do
it once, and then you're like, what? Yeah, fine.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of It's About to Go Down, which is a reference to Timber, when Jason and I went to the Thai restaurant that we really like to go get khao soi at, they have some sort of Sirius FM channel or something where they were just playing slowed down versions of pop music. And so they had a version of Timber that was just like a lounge singer version of Timber. It was extremely strange.
You're not talking
strange.
About like they actually took the song and like slowed it down in the computer. You're talking about somebody remade it in the style of a lounge singer.
It sounded like they took the original vocal tracks and just changed the super fun happy beat down to chill lounge levels. And there were some other ones where they did that too, like the Katy Perry one where she does it with Juicy J, but the Juicy J stuff was totally missing, so it was just the Katy Perry parts. It was very weird. And so we were sitting there the whole entire time where we were waiting for our khao soi, as you do, contemplating what was going on with the music. But
I would feel like I was having a stroke or something, and I would be inclined to call the police.
Well, it's very unsettling because it's like it's something where you know it so well, and then you just hear this slightly altered version of it, and it's just like, no, this is wrong. My brain is telling me this is wrong. Flee. But
you've got like a drunk Van Morrison doing Kesha karaoke.
Yeah, it's like, it's going down. We're shouting Timber. You better move.
It sounds
you
like
better dance. And it's like, what is going on?
It sounds like when the Disney kids, they redo modern pop songs and like clean them up and like release entire CDs. Have you seen those before?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's exactly that kind of thing is what it sounds like you're mm-hmm. describing to me. That's horrifying.
Very strange.
Let's see. Slowed down Timber song. I don't want it actually slowed down.
Look on Apple Maps.
Apple Maps. See if I can fly over it.
Yes.
Slow down cover Timber song. That's terrible. Helena Maria cover. I don't know who this is. Ah, that's really loud. Thank you. Jesus. YouTube. I think some YouTubers, two young women, one wearing a Captain America shirt.
Mm-hmm. As you do.
They're playing it on acoustic guitars.
Oh, good. That's not it. We should probably pick a title.
We only have a couple.
Okay.
I turned the music off, so I'll stop shouting at you. We have
I
the Transformer.
No level changes at all.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm trying to. We don't really have the money for like better microphones and compressors and things, so I'm just going to shout at the microphone and sort of create that effect that my voice is very compressed.
Yeah.
We have a transformer that turns into a tumbleweed. We have Dan's Street View podcast. I am everyone's sports dad. And Milk Factory made it in there, even though that was an after show.
Yeah. I like I am everyone's sports dad, and I also like the what was the second to last one?
Sports dad, and then you had the Dan that. Street View podcast.
Yes, Dan Street View podcast. That's probably my favorite.
The Dan Street View podcast, or just Dan Street View podcast for the title, and then I am everyone's sports dad is the description. Although it's a very Dan-centric title and description.
Who cares? Everybody's here for you and me. Everybody's here for everybody. So you know, this would be a Dan week.
Yeah, I don't know that that's the case, but I'll take it. I'll pretend.
Don't try to be humble.
Pretty sure I'm the sidekick on this podcast.
No.
All right. So was that a yes to?
Yes. In the order that you did it. Well, I'm struggling to remember if it was the Dan Street View podcast or if it was Dan's Street View podcast.
Hmm.
Do you recall?
I don't. I'm inclined to say the. But then we can listen back and see if that was what it was actually.
Okay. I feel like I would have said Dan's, but...
When you were addressing the audience, you would have said, this is the Dan Street View podcast. I don't know. But we'll give her a listen in the bootleg.
I am everyone's sports dad does make me laugh, though. Thank you for that.
Is there anything in particular you'd like to learn?
No, not at all. Thank you. Yeah. I'm good.
I'm not great at tennis. I can teach you the rules of tennis, but playing the tennis so much, I'm not that great.
I'm okay at tennis.
Good.
Also, what was it you were doing there? Was that the playing the tennis? I'm not so great. What was that?
It was just me talking. Was I doing a thing?
No, it was just, it sounded not like a human would say that, except for like if you were, I don't know, Jerry Lewis. But
maybe I turn into Jerry Lewis when I play tennis. You don't know.
Maybe world-renowned tennis player Jerry Lewis.
Check me out at Neighborhood Goods this Saturday.
The only sports that I was really ever good at when we would do PE were volleyball and tennis.
If you're good at volleyball, that means you got to be good at badminton.
Maybe. We never had a badminton thing.
You didn't play badminton in PE?
No.
I assume you had the same sort of thing that Arizona had, that when it was really hot outside, you got to play in the basketball courts because you can't go outside or you'll die.
No, Dan, don't be silly. Florida's like, go outside. It's fine. It's just humid. It's a wet heat.
The denial of the actual climate in Florida is baffling.
Yeah, it was never too hot to go outside for PE, ever, under any circumstances.
See, you come to Arizona and you get one summer where it's in the upper one teens and a kid passes out and needs to go to the nurse, then they start getting some letters from parents saying maybe they should stay inside when the temperature's over 110.
Well, that's thoughtful of those parents.
Yeah.
No, we had all of our stuff outside in the hot, gross everything of Florida. But the
shower down to get an A. It's that other podcast.
What?
Shower down to get an A is a thing that they say on Roderick on the Line. I guess I forget if it's Merlin or John's PE teacher used to tell them that they had to shower in order to get an A in PE class.
That's weird because I've listened to so much Roderick on the Line, but I don't register that one. I haven't listened to the most recent one, though. Was that something?
It's pretty good.
Okay.
I was listening to it today, too, which is another reason that, like, watching this movie, I felt very much that if you combine Walter and the dude, it's just John Roderick.
Mm.
You get the hair, you get the facial hair there, too.
So does that make Merlin Donnie?
Doesn't not make him Donnie.
Mm.
But I don't think we have enough evidence of Donnie in the movie to really make that call.
No, we don't. We are out of our element.
Yeah. I mean, we know he surfed, but that's about it. We don't know if he played in a band, or if he has any opinions on Morrissey.
Well, on that somber note about the death of Donnie, and how much we all miss him, and all of the people who are inspired by Donnie to live their lives in the Donnie fashion, we should wrap up our after show.
Mm-hmm. Say goodbye to the live listeners.
Goodbye, live listeners.
They are gone, and I am stopping recordings.